interview with State Senator James H. White, Memphis, Tennessee, August 19th, 1974. Tell me just a little bit about your own, a quick summary of your own political background. You've just become Shelby County Democratic Chairman, right?
Yes, I was elected this month, Chairman of the Shelby County Democratic Party. I was elected to the State Senate in November 72, first successful election. I ran, had a primary opponent and a general election opponent. I ran the previous year in, it would be 71, for the city council, got in the runoff and was defeated in the runoff. I ran the year prior to that, my first year, 1970, for the House, State House, against the same gentleman I eventually beat in the Senate. He was in the House and ended up lost by a narrow margin in November 71. That was my first venture into politics.
What caused you to get in at that time?
Well, I was a newspaper reporter for 12 years prior to becoming a lawyer, and I covered just government. I covered City Hall for about 7 years and the federal building about four, and I covered the legislature a little bit. Covered county government, never covered anything really except government. Then when I went to night law school and started practicing law in 69, even more reason to be interested in politics. I've always been interested in politics. I always covered politics as a reporter, and that sort of stayed with me.
What's the state of the Democratic Party in Shelby County?
What's the state of it? I think it's probably not in too good a shape right now. We've still got factionalism. That's Memphis has a very large black population, and the Memphis was always traditionally Democratic when it was a one-party state, and those in the Democratic Party who were in control were the conservative, while the Democratic Party itself was conservative nationwide. And as the party became more liberal, a great many of these older politicians in the Democratic Party in Shelby County just sort of dropped out, either became independent or became inactive, and they couldn't follow the thinking of the national party, and so a lot of those people are tending to come back in, though, I think, now, and realizing that whatever might be wrong in their view with the national party, it's not all roses on the other side. I think Watergate has caused some of that thinking. The old law and order picture of the Republican Party is not quite so clear anymore. Since we have number three top people in that administration have been disgraced, and a number of the staff's been disintegrated. And of course, they were the ones hammering at us about law and order. And so I think that they will benefit from Watergate.
Do you expect the Democrats to retain control of the legislature?
Yes,
this
I
year?
Expect them to increase the margin substantially. And not so much because of Watergate, but because I think there's a general dissatisfaction with the voters because of the economy and things in general. People are looking for change. And I don't think that change is being the Republican administration. I think the governor. I think that we're going to have a Democratic governor, and we're going to have more Democrats in the House, particularly. I think the House margin will go up. It's now 51. Well, it was 51-48. It's now 50-49. I think it'll be 60-40 or better.
How much of that will be a result of the reapportionment plan is drawn? The Republicans contend that the lines were drawn to maximize the number of Democratic seats.
I don't think that that's the case. I think the fact that we have a very narrow margin in the House now would indicate to me that we couldn't have our way, so to speak, to gerrymander people out of the House. I think it's a case of better candidates. I mean, I know that sounds corny, but I really do think. I was at a meeting of the House, Shelby County House candidates the other day with the Speaker who was in town, and he's very impressed with, for example, the Shelby County candidates. We've got some bright young people that are running. Miss Pamela Guy, the GAIA, who won the nomination, defeated a in a district that's 35% black. And you know, you just take away the Republicans and the blacks, that doesn't leave many white, you know, just white moderates or white Democrats. So she obviously didn't win with white votes. She beat a black candidate, and she beat a former House incumbent and won the nomination.
What's her name?
Pamela Guy, G-A-I-A. She's a psychology major at Memphis State. And these people are talking, getting out and talking to people on things, you know, not giving them the old political BS either. I think they're concerned.
Is the Democratic Party in Shelby County becoming basically a coalition of blacks, organized labor, academic community, and other liberals?
Yes, except that you've got some conservatives that I don't know whether they hope to change us, you know, to bring the party back to what they would like to see it, or whether they're remaining active to just keep balance or what. But basically, it's most Democratic votes in Shelby County are black right now, and they're not black, they're liberal. And the other people that call themselves Democrats have been calling themselves independents. I think that they're finding it less uncomfortable to be a Democrat.
And what is this going to mean this fall, considering the Democratic nominee, a man who at least has an image of being conservative, pictured that way, and is a nominee with less than 1/4 of the vote in the primary?
I think he's got a tough battle ahead of him. He is conservative. But he, like some conservatives, namely Lyndon Johnson, who have been, I think he can learn, and I think he's already learned that you don't lose votes by addressing yourself to the needs of the black community, and you still retain the support you have in the white community. And I think Blanton can win in a walk if he'll do that. But if he just ignores the blacks and figures they've got nowhere else to go, he's going to be disappointed, because 40% of them went with Howard Baker and against him last year before last.
Well, we went to his unity meeting, or whatever, I guess that's what it was called.
Last, yeah.
The one with all the candidates, just sat in on the press conference. When the questions were put to him was specifically on that question, that what is he going to do to attract liberals and, the labor and black who failed to get a hold as much support for at least as most Democrats did last time.
Mm-hmm.
His basic response was he felt his record showed that he expressed concerns of interest to those groups.
Well, I
think he's going to have to do more than that?
I think he's going to have to do more than say I'm going to be fair with everyone, as his ads, the tone his ads took in the latter part of his campaign. I think he's going to have to get specific and talk about some problems and how he would approach them. Of course, I think he made the statement that he would name a black to his cabinet, but the way that came out, it sounded like tokenism. But I think he's going to have to meet with the blacks and campaign in the black community.
Do you anticipate the legislature in the upcoming session will again pass a runoff provision?
I don't know. Maybe a statewide runoff law would have a better chance of passing. The trouble with runoff laws is, on the one hand, the blacks and the liberals say that this is, and with good justification, this is designed to keep minorities from holding office, because some minorities will never be able to get a majority on the second go-round because the whites will all go down the line. Probably be true if there were that many blacks as opposed to whites. On the other hand, when you have a runoff, nobody comes. We had a runoff in the municipal judge election, and in the only about, 3% of the voters in Shelby County voted in the runoff. Nobody voted, so it's just a waste of money. And the idea that the majority ought to, somebody ought to have a majority vote ignores the fact that when you have a runoff on a smaller race, it's nobody participates in it. But maybe they would in a gubernatorial runoff. And so there's a legitimate reason for drawing the distinction between local and state races, I think. The larger the race, the more apt you would have to be, to have interest in that participation. But why have a runoff? Nobody comes.
Why, in your opinion, why did Governor Dunn veto that bill?
I don't have any. I've often wondered why he beat those bills. Some of the vetoes, I don't know.
How do you rate him as governor?
Delightfully naive. He's a charming fellow. He means well. He has been refreshing in many ways, in that he didn't come up through the ranks and he didn't have any preconceived notions, but I think he surrounded himself with some people that were incompetent. And he got some bad advice.
Were they more incompetent or inexperienced? And like political skills?
Incompetent in the sense he was inexperienced. You mean the people around him?
Yeah.
I think in some cases incompetent. You know, his legal assistant, Lee Smith, he could have done better than that. He had some people around him that could have been, he could have done better. Gotten better people.
Was his major problem in dealing with the legislature is staff?
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think he got some bad advice. He shouldn't have taken the approach of what's the political thing to do. And so maybe he ought to just get in and stumble around and make mistakes. And in one sense, I admire him for that. But like the East Tennessee Medical School thing, he just beat himself over the head with that. I voted with him, but I wasn't governor, though. I could have handled it. I think I could handle it better than him. He fought with the legislature when he knew he couldn't win on issues that, like the Arlington Deaf School. They passed that thing three times and he kept vetoing it. And I don't really think he's ever gotten the facts about the Arlington Deaf School, the need for it in Shelby County. So I guess it's a big job. There's a lot of governor has to attend to, but it does seem that he really, you know, when you're getting bad advice or bad information, your image is affected by that, and so you take a position based on that misinformation, and you're stuck with it. Sometimes it's not comfortable to get off of a position.
What do you plan to do as county chairman?
Try to hold the fort. We got an interesting ticket here in Memphis. Black congressman, congressional candidate, Harold Ford, who's been somewhat of a Stormy Petrel, a highly successful family, the Fords, and Ray Blanton, who is a proven failure as far as getting black votes in Shelby County are concerned. But that was against Howard Baker, who had a good civil rights record as opposed to Lamar Alexander. I don't think Lamar Alexander has any record of any kind. Just a young unknown factor, a very clean cut, nice looking young man, but I don't know of any record he has. So I think it'll be altogether different. Of course, you've got the possibility of a U.S. Senate race, which could further weaken or strengthen the Democratic Party based upon, you know, assuming Howard Baker were appointed vice president, then presumably would have an election this fall for the U.S. Senate. John J. Hooker with a candidate, or Dick Fulton with a candidate, or even Butcher. It would be an interesting November, assuming Winfield Dunn were the Republican candidate.
How would a Democratic candidate be selected? I mean, in a primary, a special primary of a state executive committee?
Well, there's a kind of a hiatus in the law as to how you do it after the primary, but presumably the state Democratic Executive Committee would certify someone as the nominee. The only way I can think of to do it. And there's talk of a Alexander Dunn ticket with Dunn running for U.S. Senator, as opposed to Hooker or Blanton. And that'd be an interesting race, because Dunn is weak in East Tennessee because of his medical school position, and Blanton's weak in the urban areas because of his black situation. Of course, Hooker is very strong in the black areas, but he's weak in many white areas because of his chicken situation. Still living with him, I guess. You remember that.
Right. How significant was the Supreme Court race issue? Was it significant in a symbolic sense, and that's it, or is it more than that?
I think it's very significant. Not only in terms of the kind of court we're going to have, because I think we're going to have an excellent court, one of the best in the nation. I think we really got some fine minds on that court, and I think I'm not being partisan when I say that they were head and shoulders above the three Republican candidates. But I just really, I'm really impressed with the court. But as you know, there's a political ramifications in the Supreme Court too, because they do appoint the Attorney General, and the Attorney General is a member of the Building Commission. And the State Building Commission does have a lot of patronage power in terms of architecture, architects, etc.
Who else is on the Building Commission?
Of course, the Governor, the Commissioner of Finance Administration, and the Attorney General, and the Comptroller. There are five. I'm not sure of all the else.
How many elected by the legislature? I mean, the Attorney General, I understand, is elected by the Supreme Court, but...
Well, I think the speakers, both speakers are on the... on the Building Commission.
And the Comptroller is elected by the legislature.
The Comptroller is elected by the legislature. We elect the three constitutional officers. But they're not all on there. I don't really know the makeup.
There's likely then to be a Democratic majority.
Yeah, I would think so. Even if Lamar Alexander wins, we'll have a Democratic majority. Well, it's a certainty, unless the Supreme Court appoints a Republican to the Attorney General's post, and they're not going to do that. Assuming that it's a qualified Democrat. I think that would be... I'd follow if they did something like that.
Well, what's the political significance of it beyond that, in the broader sense of a state where both U.S. senators and the governor are all Republicans? And many people at least think the Republicans favor to win the governor's office again.
I'm not sure I understand your question. You mean the fact that they won, and even though the state apparently is Republican?
No, I wouldn't say the state is necessarily apparently Republican, but in recent years, Republicans have had the greater success in statewide races than here the Democrats sweep. What does it mean in terms, does it mean anything insofar as Democratic Party unity, Democratic Party coming back together, more awareness within the Democratic Party of the need for unity? Are any of those factors in this thing?
Possibly, I think so. Of course, they ran as a ticket, and they campaigned, and... I think they were just far and head and shoulders above the Republicans. They all, most of them, all but one, have been on the bench, have appellate court experience. None of the Republicans did. And Joe Henry, the one who has never been on the bench other than just sitting specially, is known all over the state. A highly colorful and competent lawyer. He's a very able writer. On the president of Tennessee Bar Association. They were just head and shoulders above the other Republican candidates. I think that's the significance. It was a personal victory for them, and the way the campaign was running.
Is there any chance of the Democratic Party as a party taking a greater role in the future in trying to select candidates for statewide office as a result of the Supreme Court thing?
You mean...
Right, in some states, none in the South, there are states in which, say, the party itself will recommend or endorse a candidate in a primary.
In a primary? Oh, no, I'm opposed to that. That wasn't a primary, though, sir.
Right, I realize that.
I don't think the party ought to ever endorse candidates in a primary. But I think that's... Well, if I were running against an incumbent Democrat that I thought ought to go, the outlives the youthfulness of every head in me, I would resent the hell out of the fact that he would, because he was an incumbent and his connections were the established within the party, that he could get the support of the party against me. And that would tend to make me want to say the hell with the party.
What do you think is the effect, insofar as the Democratic Party is concerned, of the decision in not renominating the Chief Justice?
Well, you think, do I think that hurt the party?
Did it hurt it or help it?
Well, I don't know that it did either one. I don't think most people know who's on the Supreme Court. I'm sure it didn't help them with the people that are close to Chief Justice Dyer, but I just think that it's wrong to assume that an incumbent is necessarily more qualified than somebody else. And when we have a situation where the party has to nominate either an incumbent or somebody challenging him, and I think they ought to be weighing the balance. And even foul warning, I think that everybody on that court is more qualified than he is.
Would you mind explaining, it's going to take a few minutes, but explain just what happened, that whole procedure beginning with the squabble over the medical school and its relationship through the Supreme Court election? I want to make sure I understand that, because
I'm not sure I understand what the medical school has to do with it.
Okay, well, my understanding,
for example, everybody said there was a deal made that if you would vote for the East Tennessee Medical School, I'll vote to repeal the Missouri plan. Well, I voted against the East Tennessee Medical School, and I voted to repeal the Missouri plan, too. So, obviously, I didn't make a deal.
No, the deal, I understand, was supposed to have been with the summer Republicans.
Can you cut that off and get some matches real quick?
Sure.
To begin with, I had, in my campaign and in statements since I got elected, publicly stated that I liked the concept of the Missouri plan. The idea that someone could run on their record. There was a great deal of pressure in the 73 session to get me to change my vote and vote against the Missouri plan, and I refused to do so. And I must confess that I didn't really understand the Missouri plan, because all along I thought it was a case of where you ran on your record, you ran for election the first time. If there was an election, the only time you would be appointed is when there was a vacancy, by death or resignation or impeachment. But as we drew toward the end of the past court's term, there was suddenly talk of the governor appointing three members of the Supreme Court for a full 8-year term. And I said, now what is this about appointing people for an 8-year term? That's the way it's done on the Missouri plan. So I found out that under the modified Missouri plan, you don't have an election at the end of the 8 years. If someone elects not to run for re-election, I assume that they'd have an election, and then after their 8 years, they could run on their record. And so I said, well, I'm not for that kind of plan. I'm for a straight-out Missouri plan. Well, I learned a lot about it later as I got into it. And so I first tried...
Well, there's a straight-out Missouri plan. If there's a vacancy, occurs.
All right, I'll tell you. You're on the Supreme Court, you die, I'm the governor, and there's a year left in your term. I would appoint a successor to you, but at the end of that 1 year, there'd be an election. You wouldn't just run on your record, people vote yes or no. There'd be an election for your... So on the situation where you take office...
That's the way it's done in Missouri.
I don't know that that's done strictly in Missouri, but in some states that's the way it's done. In other words, I would be for a concept of not having a judge ever appointed unless he's appointed to fill an interim, and only that interim. And I'd also be for the concept of having him run for election the first time, because the only beauty of the Missouri plan is that a person runs on his record. I see no efficacy in letting the governor make the political decision of who the three will be for a full 8-year term, as opposed to the people. Now, the people can judge him from his record, and so I buy that concept. And right now, I introduced a bill at the same time that I agreed to repeal the Missouri plan, the modified Missouri plan. I introduced a bill which would call for the straight-out Missouri plan, which provide that like in these three cases, there would have been an election for the three vacancies, the three gentlemen that weren't going to run again. There would have been an election at the end of the 8 years that run on their record, as well as everybody else. If those three had resigned or died in the middle of the term, the governor would have appointed them until the end of the term, and then there would be an election, and thereafter they'd run on their record. But I got no support for my bill, because there are plenty of people up there who just don't think that someone ever should ever run on their record that they ought to have to face the voters. And you can argue it both ways, because the people that say they ought to be in an election, they don't even know who's on the court anyway. And so, that's an argument against both systems. There's no real good system for electing judges that I can think of. I think you're just as likely to have political hacks if they're elected by the, if they're appointed by the governor, as especially since he can keep rejecting all three names, get three more until he gets down to the, to the one man he's going to put on there.
And he doesn't have to pick one of the three.
He doesn't. He can reject without any reason. Three more. Give me three more. And so if you had a nominating commission which was antagonistic to the governor, which I can't foresee, he could still thwart them by just continuing to reject their nominations.
Right, the background on this, though, is this modified Missouri plan was a relatively new procedure for Tennessee.
Right.
It involved a three-member nominating commission?
I don't know how many members it has.
But a nominating commission, who is appointed by whom?
Well, that part's been was part of the lawsuit. Originally, the legislature was on it. I'm not familiar with the makeup of the thing. I think there are about five members appointed by the governor.
Okay, and then they were, in effect, served as a screening committee.
Right.
All right, then three vacancies occurred on the court, or would be occurring. Is that what the situation was?
Of the five members on the court, three of them had elected not to run for re-election. So under that modified Missouri plan, by the first week in June, you have to notify the governor whether or not you're going to run for re-election. And if you're not going to run for re-election, then that triggers the nominating procedure, and the governor appoints. Let's say all five members of the court decided they didn't want to run for re-election. On June 1, they would have to either notify the governor or it becomes vacant. And in other words, either way, they've got to say, I'm going to run again, or else he takes over.
Three said no in this case.
Right. And theoretically, he could appoint the whole Supreme Court, one man. A lame duck governor, that could do that. So I don't see any beauty in that plan. But I do. I still would like to see us adopt a straight-out Missouri plan.
But under the plan that existed, there was no advise and consent function, say, of the Senate.
No.
And then the governor waited too late to make the appointment. Is that basically what happened? That's one of the points I'm not quite clear on.
No, that didn't involve it. You're talking about the phone situation when phones was appointed. But I'm,
all right,
see,
yeah.
Phones would be running for re-election this year. It was Taylor Turley thing is what you're talking about.
Right,
not Phones,
right.
But Taylor Turley thing.
Right, right.
That's when Taylor and Turley were vying for that thing. Turley was Dunn's original appointment, and Taylor said he won it by a write-in, and the Supreme Court held that neither one of them won it. And the appointed phone was under the nominating procedure. But these were the three people that did retire. That would not have run for re-election. Under the Missouri plan, the governor could appoint not only interim appointments, but a full 8-year term. He could appoint five friends of his who are all sons of his relatives who just passed the bar by just rejecting all the other lawyers in Tennessee through that procedure they got to them.
Does the lieutenant governor play any active political role?
Any better. He should, yes. He's certainly in a powerful position to do so. We have, I think, the only lieutenant governor who's elected by the Senate. But it's also the only lieutenant governor, one of the few, who presides over the Senate. I think we ought to have an elected lieutenant governor, but he ought not to be the Speaker of the Senate. He ought to like the vice president. Well, the vice president presides over the Senate, but I think that we ought to elect our own speaker, and the governor ought to have a lieutenant governor who would succeed to him in the event of something happened to the governor. In other words, like in our presidential, we've got a Democratic lieutenant governor, and the people elected a Republican governor. I think once they're done, they've been killed in a plane crash, and he ought to have, the party ought to have their man to take over. If they wouldn't have had, we'd have had a Democratic government. By the same token, if Blanton is successful and something happened to him, there should be a Democratic lieutenant governor to take over. Of course, there will be. I feel confident. There's not going to be any change in Democratic control of the Senate. We've got better control than the House has anyway.
To what extent is party discipline imposed in the legislature?
I suppose it's different in both houses. I think there's more control in the House than there is in the Senate, primarily because you've got in the Senate, you've got a lot of older people that nobody's going to control them. You can't tell them anything. For example, we had a situation where three or four of them bolted from the caucus on the nomination and the election of the controller. You probably know about that situation. I, for example, voted for Bill Snodgrass in the caucus. But Snodgrass lost, and Kephart was the nominee, and so I went in the general meeting and voted in general caucus and voted for Snodgrass. I mean, for Kephart. But three or four of them didn't. So that's...
And the fact that several of those were committee chairmen, weren't they?
Later named committee chairman. That hasn't helped Wilder at all, but he did that.
Is that likely to be an issue in the next time a lieutenant governor is nominated?
I think it's an issue, but I think it's a foregone, just about a foregone conclusion that Wilder will be reelected. Now, he has no serious threat. But I don't think Crouch is a threat to him.
Rick, were to have a serious threat?
Yeah. I would think so. But don't sell McWhorter short. He's a campaigner.
What's the issue involved in that House speakership?
I don't know. I've never served in the House and hadn't served the Senate that long, but generally it's a matter of style and approach, and there's a philosophical difference between the two.
What's the philosophical difference?
McWhorter's a much more conservative candidate than McKinney. But he's also more pliable, I think, and probably can deal with people better. Whereas McKinney has a reputation generally of being pretty heavy-handed.
How effective are the black legislators?
In what way? You mean the legislation they're getting passed? I don't think they're too effective with legislation.
I mean, they
prevent legislation from being passed. And they carry the balance of power on a lot of legislation. Yes. They certainly are effective to that extent. They caucus and tend to stay together on issues that are important to them. So I guess they are effective to that extent, more so than any other block of votes in the House would be.
Is there a single leader in that group?
I don't know. I doubt it. They all tend to be sort of prima donnas in their own way, like whites are. Murphy's is influential. I think Pruitt is. Nashville. This Lois DeBerry is fast becoming a very effective race left.
What kind of a role does Avon Williams play? Is he effective or not?
I'm a great admirer of his myself. I heard that he was intractable, demanding, oversensitive and everything else, but I found him to be a real capable, nice fellow. I like him. He's got guts. I understand he's changed a lot, and he's become he's been affected since I've been up there.
A lot in what way?
Well, I think he's become less sensitive and emotional and quick to anger and quick to defend himself. He can still do it well, but I mean,
you know, he talks, gets around and talks to the legislators, to the other senators, and he takes defeat gracefully and doesn't get sensitive about it, and keeps coming back doggedly, and he's got some good legislation passed.
Such as?
Well, the last year he passed the, or maybe year before last, the an important housing bill. Now, the governor came out with a bill to enable low-cost housing to be built. His bill sort of complements that to provide loans for refurbishing housing, as opposed to building new low-cost housing. He passed a very good sovereign immunity bill in the Senate, which of all places passed the Senate and failed in the House. Tennessee Municipal League was opposed to it, which more or less just did away with completely the idea of a sovereign immunity, you know, for lawsuits against the cities. I can't think of, they don't come to my mind right away, but I've just noticed that seems to be more effective as the day goes on. I think he is one of my more conscientious legislators in Nashville.
How about the Ford family? Where do they fit in terms of black politics in Shelby County?
Well, someone said all they've got are votes. But they apparently are to be reckoned with in Shelby County black politics for a long time to come.
Because where are they, three brothers?
Three brothers, and they all won in August. Emmett was nominated to take over Harold's seat. Harold was, of course, as expected, won the 8th district nomination. And John, the real big surprise, just literally stomped Senator Jill Patterson 2-1. And he gets all kind of wild publicity all the time, but it seems to help him rather than hurt him.
What kind of wild publicity? Because I'm not that familiar with him.
Well, one night he was arrested by city police. He's on the city council. And the police said he was going about 70 or 80 miles an hour down 2nd or 3rd Street, right in the urban area. And he wouldn't get out of the car, according to the police, and they drew guns on him, and he made a public statement saying the police were out to kill him, and things like that. He's been involved in a number of situations where he was being sued, for a check that wasn't good. He's always battling on the council. He was charged recently with making phone calls, that are personal phone calls on the city card. Just always in the news and things like that. And people talk about the antics of the Ford family. Harold, he sued some Nashville hotel for libel and slander, and said that the manager had accused him of running an unkempt place, that his wife was having men friends while he was gone. I know his wife, and I'm sure there's no substance at all to it, but I know I wouldn't have sued either. My wife said to me, if some hotel manager accused me of that, then I'd kill you if you sued. Because, you know, there's always somebody else, there must be something to that. But they thrive on this kind of publicity, apparently. First time I ever met John was when I was running for the city council, and he was running for council. And he was telling me how he's going to take it, no problem. Run against an incumbent Reverend Nose. And I thought to myself later, well, that bragger, he's just doing a lot of talking. He did. And he's doing the same kind of talking against Joe Patterson. It's a cinch. He doesn't even live in the district, apparently. And Patterson tried to make the most of that, and he didn't even answer him. He just said, Patterson's probably out sleeping or drunk. He doesn't know where I live. And he won. And he doesn't live in the district.
What's the secret of their success?
I don't know. It may indicate that the black politician ought to adopt the Ford plan. But you may have more and more black politicians taking that approach. In other words, just make as much noise as you can.
How is Harold in the legislature?
Harold? I think he was effective. He's conscientious. In many ways, Harold is a much quieter and subdued person than his brother John. He's a good.
Is he a viable candidate for Congress?
Well, as a nominee in a district that's about over 40% black, I would think any black candidate would be a viable candidate in a situation like that. I'd hate to think that if I were black and I were the nominee and I had over 40% black in my district, that I didn't even have a chance running against a man who has been a rubber stamp for the administration, and that's all he's been, and has opened attack in other areas too. But he's one of the four that voted against even having the impeachment hearing inquiry to see if there were grounds. Had a noose fashion, a rope fashion into a noose, accusing the House of Representatives of conducting a lynch mob by even voting to set up the Judiciary Committee thing to go into the facts. Now he's saying, oh, all along I was waiting to see what the facts came in before I decided how to vote. I never did say I wouldn't vote for that, but he did vote against even looking into it. So I think that in a situation like that he's viable.
Is he making out an issue in the campaign? A major issue?
Rubber stamp, yeah. That and Ford. The economy.
What's Ford's professional background in business?
They're all sons of a well-known, long-established funeral director, N.J. Ford and Sons.
And they in the business themselves?
Yes, they've all been involved in the business. Sons and the owner. I don't know of any other business they've been in. I think they're pretty. They may have other sidelines.
Was the father one of the traditional active mortician politicians?
I think so. Yeah.
Where is labor moving insofar as black political leadership? We heard one theory that the future black political leaders are going to be coming out of the labor movement in another 5 years.
I think that's true. We've got some evidence of that in Memphis already. Lehman Hood is becoming more and more influential all the time. Leon Lynch, there are a couple of people in Memphis that you ought to talk to if you haven't already. Leon Lynch and Lehman Hood, they're both, Lynch is involved with Philip Randolph, A. Philip Randolph Institute, and Lehman Hood is...
What is Lynch's first name?
Leon Lynch, L-Y-N-C-H. And Lehman Hood, L-E-A-M-O.
I'm good.
Now they're involved with AFSCME, American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees, and that union is bringing about what you're talking about. In fact, that's one of the fastest growing unions in the world, as you know.
Are they expanding elsewhere in Tennessee?
I don't know.
See them or others like them as potential candidates in the future?
See them as being influential. I think Lehman Hood would be a very viable candidate if he wanted to be.
What's the role of the Philip Randolph Institute here?
I don't know. I'm very not knowledgeable about that. Henry Sutton, who's probably got better contacts in the black community than any other white man in Memphis. One of my associates here may fill you in if you want to talk to him about that, but I just don't know what they do. I know it's involved in votes, getting registration, but what the scope of their work is, I don't know. It's black labor. Erase that part. If you're going to erase my ignorance, you're going to have a larger gap than that. I'm just a neophyte in politics.
Is white labor in Tennessee ready yet to move into active political coalition with black labor? I'm talking about on the voter level, not the leadership level.
I guess the problem in labor is the same problem the Democratic Party has, that whites and blacks tend to fight over the differences rather than coalesce around their common goals. And I'm sure that...
Is that changing at all?
Well, I guess, feel like saying it better. I don't see any great evidence of it. I seem to see him going, but it seems to me that the black political labor leader is becoming more powerful than the white labor leader for the simple reason that that the whites, they're having the same kind of control that the white labor leader had 30 years ago, or 40 or 50 years ago, because what does a labor leader offer now to the laboring man? The bread and butter gut issues aren't as important to him now as they are to the blacks, or as they were to the whites a long time ago. And so when Lima Hood says we got to elect Jim White, elect so-and-so, they translate that in terms of whether we're going to get a decent, livable wage or whether we're going to have a running water in our house. And so they'll tend to support the labor ticket and get out and work. And when they give them a ballot, they'll take that ballot and vote it. That Ask Me ballot, Operation Big Vote, is what they call it. It's a very effective endorsement to have.
Do they support Fred Davis?
If you get on an AFL-CIO labor ballot, doesn't mean a lot. It doesn't mean a lot. The labor people just ignore it. Did they support Fred Davis? I don't know.
Is Richard Fulton perceived as a statewide candidate when you get outside of his congressional district? Could the Democrats in Shelby County look at him as a strong potential candidate for the U.S. Senate?
I would view him as just about the strongest.
He also the most...
Hooker, he would have all the advantages that Hooker has as far as... in other words, he's liberal. He's more liberal than Gore. His record's more liberal than Gore. And so I can only compare them with Hooker. He doesn't have Hooker's whatever drawbacks or disadvantages Hooker has. Of course, he's probably not as articulate as Hooker either. But I think he could get the black votes, and he would be a real tough candidate, I think. I think Hooker